Sick of being upsold at gyms?
My guy, you're currently a base member. For $90 more, I can upgrade you to our Shred membership. For $130 more, you'll be a swole member. And for just $300 more, you'll reach Sweat Platinum.
At Planet Fitness, you'll get energy without the upsell. Never pushy, always free fitness training and equipment for every workout. It's fitness that fits your budget. Join Planet Fitness for just $1 down and $10 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, May 10th. See Home Club for details.
Hey folks, and welcome to Typology, the show on which we explore the mystery of the human personality and the mystery of the human adventure, all through the lens of the Enneagram. My name is Anthony Skinner, your co-host and producer. So happy to have you here, folks. We've got another great show for you today with a great guest. Our guest practiced medicine for over 29 years as an OBGYN physician and reproductive endocrinologist. During that time, she earned a Master's of Divinity and a Doctor of Ministry, all focused on Christian leadership. Today, she brings this wealth of knowledge to us as an author of the book Sexpectations. That's right, I said Sexpectations, Reframing Your Good and Not So Good Stories About God, Love, and Relationships. This is a fascinating conversation, folks. We could have done a series with her. We're so happy to have her on the show. And of course, I'm talking about Enneagram 5, Dr. Carol Tanksley. About halfway through, we had a technical problem, and the back half of our time together with Dr. Carol was a loss due to the interwebs. But we're going to have her back at some point, and we'll get the rest of that conversation to you then. But this is really, really rich. So glad to have her on the show, and really glad you're here. That's it for me, Anthony Skinner. And now, without any further ado, here is the host of our show, Ian Crum.
Hello, Typology family. Ian Cron here once again, joined by my good friend Anthony Skinner on the show where we talk about the human personality, the mystery of the human adventure, all through the lens of the Enneagram. This is like year seven, Anthony. Here we are, still going strong. How are you, my friend?
We're about to hit season eight. Wendy just told me that the other day, and I actually wasn't even aware of it. I can't believe it. It's really cool. We got some history behind us here.
And you know what? We're going to be talking with someone today about a topic that surprisingly, after almost, 350, 400 shows, we haven't spoken about before.
I know. I'm so excited about this topic and our guests.
And I can't wait. And because I can't wait, I'm going to go right to our guest. I want to welcome right now Dr. Carol Tanksley, Enneagram 5 with a four wing, author of the new book, Sexpectations, Reframing Your Good and Not So Good Stories About God, Love, and Relationships. Carol, welcome to our show.
Well, it is awesome, guys, to be with you. You know, I listen to a lot of your shows. And when I got this opportunity, it was like, yay, I'm on Typology.
Oh. Love that.
Well, we're glad for the enthusiasm. And after all these years, we're glad to still be on Typology. So yes, well done to all of us. Well done to all of us. So, Carol, you are an Enneagram 5. We always begin by asking people a little bit about their Enneagram biography. How did you learn you were a 5? Did you learn about the Enneagram? What was it like? How has it changed you?
It was maybe 10-ish years ago. I was a little late to the party in some respects. About 10-ish years ago, when I first heard about the Enneagram, didn't get excited about it immediately. I've got to tell you that the first real introduction I had was when I saw and then read your book, The Road Back to You, and really loved it. I actually bought copies of that for the team of, I have four or five people who work with me. And I bought that and we shared it. When I first knew about the Enneagram, I didn't think of myself as a 5. I was trying to figure out, like everybody does, you know, what number am I? Who am I? I thought, well, I think I'm a 1 because I'm relentless in trying to get better. Well, maybe a 3, but things just didn't fit. And I wouldn't be able to tell you today which program it was, but it was actually one of your Typology shows a few years ago with a 5. And something that I kind of came together in that, you know, as fives, we're all up in our head. And I realized that being all up in my head was the water I had been swimming in since I've been a kid. All the stuff I've been through, all the things I've experienced, I would always be trying hard to figure it out, all up in my head. And I thought that fits. That's kind of the core. That's the water I've been swimming in all along. And then things start to make sense.
Mm. Yes. And when you look at your CV, that's pretty apparent,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah. For sure.
You know, your educational and professional resume indicate that you are a person who cares deeply to know things deeply and to really explore a topic to its depths. And that hunger has been lifelong.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's
wonderful. When I was a little girl, I now remember being fascinated by tiny things and by big things, by microscopic images that I would see. And I had I wanted a microscope when I was a kid, and my parents got me one of those little tiny 12-inch child microscopes. I remember being fascinated by the stars and astronomy. And I decided one day I am going to work with cells, because I learned about that looking under the microscope. And so then, yes, I went to medical school and I became a OBGYN physician and then a reproductive endocrinologist. And one of the things that reproductive endocrinologists do is deal with fertility and eggs and sperm. So I was dealing with some of those cells and learned about embryology. So that was just the way my brain worked. And in some ways it served me well. And I also learned some of the dark side of what that was like.
Mm. Talk to me about the dark side a little bit.
I grew up in a very dysfunctional family, and in a lot of ways, who doesn't? You know, whose family is really functional? But growing up in a dysfunctional family, I continued to try to figure that out as well. And as I became a young woman, actually going through medical training, I was getting more and more unhappy. And my own distress was getting greater and greater. About the time I was starting medical practice, my chronic unhappiness developed some really deep distress, and I kept trying to figure it out. And I was using the tools that I knew, you know, scientifically, and I was reading self-help books. I also believed that God had an answer all the way along, but I wasn't finding it. And I kept trying to, again, figure it out in my head, and none of that was working. When I finally started to understand that it was not knowledge that I needed to, quote, fix me, then I started to make progress. I had known about God, but the way I describe it is I truly met Jesus. It was a very personal, right brain thing. Things started to change in my life. I started to come to terms with the emotional and feeling part of me, hence the Wing 4. I had all kinds of feelings. They were there all the time. And I started to learn what that meant, to acknowledge that and bring that into my experience. That process was a big part of my own healing. About how I came to, you know, be the degree of wholeness that, you know, God willing, I have been able to grow into.
How did you, as a 5, get in touch with the emotional side of your life?
I realized I didn't have any other choice. There were things I was experiencing in my body that figuring it out wouldn't help. During my periods of deepest distress, for example, I would find myself sometimes walking the streets at night, literally for hours at a time, crying, couldn't stop, and trying to figure it out didn't help. So I had to start coming to understand what those feelings were trying to tell me. And I was getting professional help at that point. And so therapy was certainly a big part of how I came to understand that, and started to see my emotions not as an enemy to be pushed away or squelched, but as information that I could come to befriend my feelings, and that didn't negate the importance of the facts that I knew, but I had to befriend that right brain, emotional Wing 4 part of me. And as those two things came together, it made a big difference. It also made an enormous difference in how I related to other people. When I was all up in my head and the dark side of my fiveness, I could be around people and feel incredibly lonely because I was neither allowing them to particularly see, and I wasn't bringing my emotions to the table. I was closed off. I had walls that were so thick around me, feeling incredibly lonely, even with people. And so as I started to understand and bring some of my feelings to the picture, that started to change. I could start to receive from other people. Also, I remember one particular part in therapy. I remember saying, all my family has been so angry. They live out of anger all the time. I don't have any anger, and I'm grateful about that, how wrong I was. And so part of that process, I had to learn that there were parts of me that were angry too, and not just compartmentalize that off and throw it away.
And you said something. Anthony, just go on.
Yeah.
So you said some things that were really words that are really important, right? Fives are really good at compartmentalizing, right? This is, so what actually happens is they become disintegrated, right? Because it's all these things are in silos, separate from one another, but not integrated. And so the emotional life is over here, and my professional life is over here, and my marriage life is over here, and this is over there. My friends are over here, but there's no kind of weaving together of all of those component parts of our experience. And that I can imagine can really lead to a great sense of loneliness and isolation.
I was very well developed intellectually. I was at the top of my class in school, always at the first or second in my class, even through medical school. But none of the other parts of me were developed. Some of my mental health diagnoses at the time illustrated that. I actually, as I lived out my trauma, I actually had therapists question whether I might have what was then called DID, dissociative identity disorder. And I don't want to make too much of that and get into the DSM-5 and whatever about that. But that just illustrates how compartmentalized I was and not healthy.
Yes. Well, the reason I gave you a when you said that is because, you know, dissociative identity disorder, when we talk about dissociating, a five often looks dissociative. So like I have a friend of mine who's a five, and he laughs. He said, you know, we're all in, I always say from the dark side of our times, we're all in recovery. and he likes to say, you know, people have told me that when they look at my face, all they see is a blank computer screen.
Wow.
And I went, really?
Wow.
In other words, his affect is kind of flat. Mm-hmm. Right. When an emotion comes up, it doesn't register on his face the way it does instantly on a two, the way it does instantly on a three or on a seven. Oh my gosh. Right. Like their faces register what they're feeling even before they're feeling it. It's coming up on the face. Right. But yes. For the five, sometimes there's a kind of, for many, not all, but for some fives, there's a kind of flat affect, as though. And so what it feels like to other people is emotional distance. In James Joyce's Dubliners, which is, you know, fantastic, Joyce describes one of his characters as this way. He said, Mr. Duffy lived a short distance from his body.
I shouldn't laugh. I shouldn't laugh. But that just, that encapsulates so much. It really does. And that just makes me think also of the triad, you know, the thinking, feeling, doing, or heart, body, mind. I talked about how I had to learn about the feeling part and, you know, wing four, and that's a big part. I have gotten now to, I believe, be integrated enough that people who now come to know me tell me how much they feel seen and heard. It's a skill I have learned to listen and be present. But that is now one of the things people tell me about how they experience me. And to me, that's one of the nicest things that people can say about me. So I say that in part to encourage somebody else who may be struggling a bit with that. The dark side can actually, I believe, as we become whole and integrated, can in some ways become a strength. And I have also realized that for me, a five-wing four, it's likely one of the weakest parts of me is the doing, the action. And that in some ways is another part of the dark side, because yes. I can try and figure things out forever and ever and ever and not take action, because I want to be sure it's the right action. And in ministry and business and whatever, the imposter yes. syndrome gets all in there. So I have had to learn that about myself and to push myself with help of others around me to take action, even if I don't feel ready. That's part of what I have come to understand about me.
Well, speaking yes, of taking and you, action, can you tell us, like, I just love this idea of you befriending your feelings. What are like one or two of the most effective practices that helped you integrate and befriend your feelings? Because obviously yeah. you've been super successful at it if people are connecting with you emotionally.
Mm-hmm.
One of the early events that we at Dr. Carol Ministries put on, I was relatively confident as the leader of our ministry that this was the right thing to do, but it was the first time we had done it, and I had a lot of fear and anxiety, a lot of anxiety. Could we pull this off? Was I thinking things through right? Was I missing something? Was I hearing God right? And frankly, a fair bit of distress about that. So what I had learned to do by that point is to acknowledge that, yeah, I'm anxious and afraid, but that there is more to the truth. One of the things that I'd learned back in my 30s as God was bringing me out of the worst of my distress was that my feelings are real, but there is more to the truth than just that. And so in making this decision, I realized that I'm anxious, and I do my best to intentionally right-size it. I don't try and ignore it. I've learned to, you know, do the breathing techniques and center myself physically to get as much information as is reasonable. Talk to the people that I know may have something to speak into the decision I'm making. Put myself in God's presence, not so much as an intellectual thing, begging God for something, but just to be with Him. And consolations, desolations, do my best to kind of sense, where is the green light? Where is the Spirit pointing? And when I sense that, to just intentionally make a decision, even though I don't feel ready. Know that I'm going to be scared. Do it afraid. Just do it.
Yep. Yep. I know you fives can get drunk in the research.
Yes.
Yeah, you're just drinking the research down, drinking the research, and you're going to get to that decision, but maybe not,
yeah.
because by the time you're done with the research, you're either bored with the topic and ready to move on to a new one,
right.
or you are in a kind of a paralyzed state,
yep.
you know, buried under all this information, right? I love that.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. Hey, Ian, the other day we were talking about times we lean on others and times we might pull back or withdraw. How do you find the right balance?
Well, you know, each of us have different needs, right, when it comes to our social battery. Like for me, I can be bursting with energy in the morning and then drained by the end of the day after meetings or speaking and just need some time alone.
So what advice would you give those who are struggling to find that balance?
Well, first, I recommend learning what you need to recharge, right? Mm-hmm. Like, is it more time with other people? Is it building space in your day to take time to read alone? If you're not sure, talking to a good therapist can help you figure that out so you can build a social life that doesn't drain your battery.
Mm.
BetterHelp's online therapy, my friend, is a great place to start. It's entirely online and designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Their therapists can help you develop self-awareness and identify what fuels you and what drains you. Find your social sweet spot, friends, with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/typologypodcast today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/typologypodcast. I want to talk about the book, Sexpectations, and I was thinking to myself earlier, you know, I oftentimes think about what our listeners are thinking. Mm-hmm. I'm trying to imagine. And okay, so I have an Enneagram 5 on, and we're going to talk about sex. We're going to talk about intimacy. We're going to talk about relationships. We're going to talk about, and they're probably thinking, you're going to talk to an Enneagram 5 about intimacy, which is now, again, this is a stereotype, not a type. I'm talking about, but they might be thinking to themselves, they're the most emotionally unavailable number, quote unquote. I'm not agreeing with this. I mean, this is how, look at this. I get little things that come up on my screen when I do different gestures. You see that? I get like balloons. I get, oh my gosh. Anyway, the point I'm trying to make is they might be thinking, boy, wouldn't a 2 be better on this topic? Wouldn't there are some other types that might be better to talk about intimacy? And I'm like, you know, here's the deal. The best therapist I ever had was a 5. Mm. And he was interesting because he was actually a Jungian. And what was so great about this guy is that he was such a non-anxious presence. Mm. He had this ability to be with whatever was in the room with this sort of ability to just observe it without any anxiety. And I think when you're talking about sex and intimacy and these very tender, vulnerable, scary things for people, right?
Yep.
That actually, it's really good to talk to a 5 who is a non-anxious presence who's like, well, let's just talk about the facts. Let's just talk about what is without getting our feelings all wonky in the process. So I think actually, I've looked forward to this conversation because I'm like, this is totally a 5 conversation. Why did you write this book?
I'm chuckling through that because in my 5-ness, I would have hardly known what the word intimacy was in sex. A lot of my trauma in my growing up had to do around intimacy and sex. And I alluded to earlier, my walls were thick. I was deeply lonely behind those thick walls, but there was absolutely nothing in me that knew anything about intimacy. And part of me is grateful for the struggle that it took me to learn this. I'll just insert this little bit of my story. After God brought me out of the worst of my distress, and I was actually now in my 40s and I kind of grown up, God brought my husband into my life. I wasn't looking anymore. I'd kind of given up. I had wanted relationships. I'd wanted to be married, but my walls were so thick, nobody could get close enough. But once I had come to enough integration, then when my husband did come into my life, it did a number on my brain. This was a part of the world that I was just totally floored by, and I had to go through another round of work, and I did. And we had a very healthy, intimate, including sexually healthy marriage until he passed away, which to me is an absolute miracle because I would not have been there, gone there, done that. And now, since he's passed away, and I've reflected on some of these things, I've been able to put some of the 5-ness of understanding the need for intimacy that God built, I believe, within every human being, and how sex and intimacy have gotten conflated, they're related, or God intended them to be related. You and I know, and I'm sure all our listeners know, that there's plenty of times sex and intimacy have nothing to do with each other, and just sorting all that out and putting some of the neurobiology there. I wrote this book because I think so many people are not putting their faith and their sexuality, their sex life together, and they're not understanding the need for intimacy that God built within us. And me as a 5, hiding behind such thick walls, having to do the hard work myself, I feel like now I have something to say.
Oh, man.
Love that.
I love that.
Can I ask something? Go ahead.
Yeah.
Yeah. So there's a therapist I work with from time to time. We do another podcast together. And he talks about people, how we confuse intimacy and intensity. And it makes me think of how you say in your book that intimacy and sex are related, but they're not the same.
Yeah.
Could you expound on that?
Sure. I want to just bring a moment of theology into this if I can. God the Father, God the Son, and God the Holy Spirit, I believe in the Trinitarian Orthodox way Christians have thought about that. Three persons so united that we are told to think of him as one God, and he is. God the Father, Son, and Spirit so united for eternity past, that we could say God evidences and experiences and demonstrates within himself infinite intimacy. God could not create human beings in his image without creating within us the need for intimacy. And what intimacy in that context, what are we talking about? I would say it's the need to see and be seen, to know and be known, to feel felt. When I went through medical school, 30 plus years ago, one of the things we were taught was that by the time you're 25 years old or so, your brain is pretty much done. Everything that's going to happen in your brain is done. Thankfully, we now know that's not true. And we could have known that in some sense from the gospel all along. But now we can actually see neurobiologically how brain pathways change. One of the main things that helps brain pathways change is the experience of being seen, of being known with human beings and with God. And that is regardless of Enneagram type. I think for me as a 5, that might have been especially difficult. And I believe that's in a large part why I had such a hard time connecting with God for such a long time. And there's trauma and all of that. And I believe that the way God intended sex to be was a physical earthly demonstration of that need for intimacy. But it is not the same. I believe that one of the things evil did was conflate that so that there's plenty of people who go for a biological, physical experience when it's the heart need to see and be seen and know and be known that they are really needing. Now, yes, God intended them to be together, and that, I believe, is what he intended marriage to be, but not everybody is married, and yet everybody needs intimacy, including Jesus. When he was here on earth, Jesus being the perfect blend of all the Enneagram types. And I believe that's one of the things you have said too, Ian. Mm-hmm. And Jesus was in complete, constant connection with his Father, seeing and being seen by his Heavenly Father always. And yet he needed people, truly needed people, as messy, horribly messy as that can be. So for somebody who was lonely like I was, who is your Peter, James, and John? That is hard, especially for somebody like me. That is hard, and it continues to take intentional effort on my part, but so critical for well-being.
Okay, I got to say, I'm leaving this conversation feeling nourished. I really, this has been such a delightful conversation, and I hope everybody will check out Carol's new book. I want to remind you of the title. It is Sexpectations, Reframing Your Good and Not So Good Stories About God, Love, and Relationships. Carol, thank you so much for coming on. We've learned more about fives on this show, and we've learned so much about topics that I know are at the forefront of everybody's mind, but they don't know how to talk about them. So thank you. Typology friends, from the bottom of our hearts, may you have love, may you have joy, may you have peace, may you have healing, and may you have rest. Until next time.